Welcome to More to Come, PW's weekly podcast on comics and graphic novel publishing. I'm Calvin Reed, now a contributing editor to Publishers Weekly. Check us out online at publishersweekly.com/comics. Okay, welcome to More to Come this week. Listeners, we have a treat. We're on site. We're at Cuchifritos Gallery, an alternative space in the Essex Market on the Lower East Side. And I'm here with Sue Joan Kopp, a visual artist whose work challenges prison censorship, social erasure, systemic social erasure, gendered surveillance. The work kind of walks across a variety of across urban communities and public institutions. You know, I would call it conceptual art, information art, but that's just, you know, a broad outline, and hopefully she's going to give us a chance to talk a little bit more about what she does, and particularly in the context of the show we're here to see, which is called Explicit. It's a fascinating look at how manga has been targeted by the prison censorship efforts, but I'm interested to talk a little bit more with her about her work, her background, and just how the issues in this this particular exhibit have motivated her. Excuse my long-winded introduction. Sue, thank you so much for being on More to Come.
Thank you for inviting me for this interview.
What'd you think about that intro? What kind of artist are you? Is that a bona fide question?
I mainly do social practice.
Mm-hmm.
But during COVID, I found that gallery space is one of the best public space to involve with people.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually work outside of the white cubes or white
boxes. Yeah, sure.
But mm-hmm. Now I use gallery spaces as an interlocker or like a connector between outside and inside of institutions.
Mm-hmm. So you did more, I guess, of what you would call sort of site-specific. You know, you worked in institutions, you worked with community groups around these issues of censorship, I guess, among other things you deal with.
Mm-hmm,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. But before we talk about the show, maybe can you tell us a little bit more about your background?
Mm-hmm. My educational background, maybe first.
Sure.
A little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm trained as an artist 100%, but recently I started my grad study in the architecture.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
So that opens up different type of perspectives on art, and mm-hmm. I actually appreciate art way more than ever before.
Interesting.
So that's one part of it, but mainly since 2007 and 2008, I work as an organizer mm-hmm. in Lower Manhattan, mm-hmm. mainly of Two Bridges, in order to mm-hmm. connect not only Chinatown, mm-hmm. but Lower East Side. Mm-hmm.
Now, what is Two Bridges? Is that an organization? Or
no. Two Bridges is an area.
The area. Oh, I see what you're saying. Oh, between the Brooklyn Bridge and the Williamsburg Bridge.
My apartment is literally.
I see. Yeah. Okay.
And because it's intersection of all different type of communities,
mm-hmm.
especially self-segregated communities, and
sure.
all different type of languages are come and goes. So
the great legacy of multicultural
uh-huh.
interaction on the
uh-huh.
Lower East Side,
uh-huh.
Asian communities, Black communities.
Mm-hmm.
Latino, Latinx,
mm-hmm.
all that,
mm-hmm.
which must make obviously for a very interesting mix of issues, people,
uh-huh.
mm-hmm. And perspectives. So tell us about Explicit, which is the name of the show.
Sure. The title of the show actually explains a lot about the project itself.
Mm-hmm.
It's from one of the banned regions the government used to mm-hmm. ban publications mm-hmm. in prison. So mm-hmm. more than 80% of books are banned because they are sexually explicit.
Mm-hmm.
But funnily enough, there are a lot of books, they are really sexually explicit, but still
circulate somehow.
Exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So I want to highlight what that explicit means then exactly. And then I want to dismantle the framework of explicit the government created. And then in order to also explicitly talk about our right to sexual speak, plus sexual speech.
Sure.
And then freedom of expression.
Sure. Yeah. Now you've chosen a fascinating category of, of comics, manga. And I just want to say, because you know, basically this podcast is about the publishing of manga. We also talk about the artistic values in it as well. But what's been exciting for me about this particular show is that manga has completely transformed North American comics over the last 25 years.
Perhaps you know better about it.
that's my thing. I write about the publishing of comics. We write about the art form, but the business side of it is very, very important to us, too. And by business side, I just mean how it's changed fandom, how it's brought a whole new market of Americans to comics, in particular girls and young women, which had completely transformed American comics, which were, you know, focused on superheroes. I mean, America's been a focus, kind of a one genre marketplace. You know, since the early 1960s, beginning in the late 90s, on the marketplace and moving into the 2000s, they slow the growth of the internet and the power of fandom, global fandom, unveiled the kind of underground popularity of manga and anime, and it has left us with the marketplace we have today, which is completely transformed by both Asian pop storytelling techniques. And fandom and manga adjacent activities like cosplay and all that. Okay, so now I talk too much, but I talk way too much. I just saw somebody in the gallery that I know.
Hi.
How are you? How is Dre?
Pretty good. Thank you.
Yeah, he's in the design. Yeah, but there you go. So it's a fascinating interruption in this interview. So,
Calvin has developed the market.
Well, I'm having my moment here. Yes. All right. Okay. All right. Okay. Back to Sue. now I lost my train of thought. But that long intro about manga is just to kind of set you up to my interest. And I've also written, because I'm retired now, but I also wrote for many years for Publishers Weekly, which is, I'm still, this podcast is for. And the issues around censorship, of course, and in particular censorship in prisons, is something that I had an opportunity to write about. I've written about Books Through Bars, which I think you've worked with there. So, that said, you kind of explained that that you're out to kind of to demystify this notion of explicit, because we know that there's really an arbitrary reason why books are suppressed. Maybe it's not so arbitrary after all. All right, I talk way too much and I apologize. But do you want to elaborate more, or should we walk around the gallery? And I'd love to hear you talk specifically about some of these pieces.
We can do that
together. Okay. Yes. Yeah. And if we could start out, one of the things that I love about the show, and I also see it as a kind of a really powerful conceptual trope, is how you've got a standing shelf of some of the most well-known manga in the world. I assume they're also on banned book lists.
Absolutely.
How many are up there? Do you know?
I didn't really count. But what I can tell is the entire list is over, 2,000. So it's...
Oh, the entire banned books list of just manga or...
Just manga.
Just manga, okay.
The entire banned book list is,
it's thousands. Sure, sure.
And then this is...
we can go over.
Less than 10% of it.
Yeah.
And then the selection is actually based on how titles are frequently banned across different states.
I see.
So for example, like a Berserk.
Yeah.
They're fully banned everywhere.
Everywhere. In every state?
almost every state.
But
because only 26 states disclose their information
about
banned movies in prison. So among those 26, 13 states.
Okay. Now, some of these I've read, some of them I haven't. I just want to mention some. Akira, of course, which is a classic. One of the most famous manga series in the world. Vagabond, also a great and historical series. Dragon Ball Z, which of course is Japanese, but it's as American as apple pie at the same time. I mean, it goes on and on. Attack on Titan. Also, one of the most popular.
Yeah, right now there are shows about it.
It's it. Is Food Wars up here? Did I see Food Wars? Oh no, that wasn't. Yeah, Food Wars. Which is hilarious. It's about cooking.
Uh huh.
But it's banned.
It's banned.
Yeah. So it's really a sort of a Ennio Asano. Now he writes very provocative and fascinating literary manga. Yes, right here. Good Night Pun Pun. Yeah. So, I mean, it's really just amazing. Inuyasha. I mean, these are some of the most popular series in the world. Because manga is a global phenomenon. So why is this your way of just showing what we're dealing with? Or why is this a part of your show?
They're really well circulated in North America. I mean, for example, to be honest, let me just disclose a little bit. When I show this piece in Asia, like because of language, it's obviously English.
Yes.
Even though it's from Asia,
sure.
They don't feel like it's theirs. It's very
interesting.
I know.
They feel like it's not theirs.
They feel like alienated somehow. I think language really matter, and then translation.
No, they're just alienated from the English translation, or
just looking at the different language, even though the title itself is somewhat familiar. And then, like, I can feel, oh, it's actually culturally fully translated at the time, at the moment. Disclosure. One second.
That's fine. Go ahead. Yeah, she's gathering her thoughts.
When I'm reading those materials, like, I should admit that some of their contents are sexually liberal, but it doesn't mean that they don't have value as literature and art.
Agreed.
And then, especially Berserk, like, everybody thinks, especially in East Asian culture, plus, like, North American, like, manga fandom, think this is the masterpiece.
Yes.
But it doesn't matter. It is the quality of the work or value of work. It's more about the content and how many tips.
Yes, of course. Always, yeah. Well, there is a perception. There is a legacy perception in American, in North American culture, that manga means pornography. Now, I think the last 25 years, some of us have worked to try to challenge challenge that notion, including the commercial area, because if you go into a chain like Barnes & Noble today, the manga selection of all kinds of manga is really tremendous, which is something that manga offered to the American market that American comics didn't. Diversity of subject matter, because manga is really about everything.
Exactly.
And more so it is here in North America than any other kind of comics. So it's interesting to hear that these kind of notions, these generalizations about manga kind of have moved with it.
But partially also because it's because of legal boundary and then general social biases.
Yes.
So for example, the Miller test, actually that is that creates the guideline, which...
For obscenity?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And those amazing manga can pass because they're treated as a material for children.
Well, that's a problem with American culture and comics anyway. Because generally speaking, comics still are sort of considered... Well, my joke about it is always that Americans think comics are for children and stupid people. But, I mean, it's gotten better, but I understand exactly what you're saying. It has this reaction to comics continues and classifying it as just for kids.
But what made me really, I'm actually mesmerized the fact that what kind of audience want to come into this room. Mm-hmm. Because like usually Gaelic Wars are typical.
Yes, yeah.
Extend an artist who is very focused on contemporary certain critical point of view. Mm-hmm. But then here, not only because of the site itself, but mm-hmm. then because of the mm-hmm. subject itself, like I got a lot of different groups of people.
Oh, that's interesting. And then, what kind of responses? Yeah.
It's like, A, they think this gallery is a bookstore.
Well, you know what? It looks like one right now.
Because of the collection itself.
Yes.
And then it's like, the power of visual is still here.
Yeah.
And then the manga, I think that is the reason, one of the reasons why mangas are censored the most.
Mm-hmm.
Like the power of the visual.
Yes.
I mean,
yes.
I can also deal with, we can talk about the broader comics in general because they're censored in a very similar
yeah.
way. But the manga, I feel like sometimes censors, they don't even look at the material. They just mm-hmm. censor with the title and the name of the author.
Yeah.
So the visual and then the foreignness of their names,
yes.
this shows the racist
yeah. mm-hmm.
aspect of the censorship.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Uh-huh.
There's this racism, bias, fear of women.
Mm-hmm.
It's all there.
Mm-hmm.
But go on. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, see, I'm gathering my thoughts now mm-hmm. here, too. Now, some observers might say, I mean, there's certain comics that say Battle Vixens.
Mm-hmm.
I've read Battle Vixens. Now, I mean, it's really silly,
uh-huh.
but it's sexualized.
Uh-huh.
How does that fit
into
this mode for suppression? I mean, is mm-hmm. that something that they can use to suppress other things that are very, you know, like Food Wars, which
mm-hmm.
is... I mean, to me, it's not, Food Wars is not very sexy. It's like kind of goofy and funny, but I haven't read the whole series either.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So, I don't know. I mean, there's some things here like what's it, Tinge Tingo,
mm-hmm.
which is, you know, kind of over the top.
My baseline is this, like some books, some forms,
mm-hmm.
which could be really entertaining.
Yeah.
And then why do you need to oppress it?
Yeah.
And then have you ever thought about the backlash once you oppress the desire?
Yeah.
I mean, there is another piece of mine is also can point the aspect of suppression.
Mm-hmm.
Like, this is, you can actually cut off this part. Like, one of my picks called Picture Bride Without Pictures.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that captures the names of very first Asian guys
mm-hmm.
for Asian plantation workers in Hawaii.
Mm-hmm.
And then until before their arrival, there is no Asian woman in Hawaii.
Mm.
Only men.
Uh-huh.
The labor of men are way more appreciated.
Yeah.
And they can replace the enslavery
too. Yeah, yeah.
And the reason why those plantation owners decided to bring those women is they realized those men, Asian men, need to release.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, there's that. Yeah.
They have been holding for years.
Yeah.
Just bring them in. Like, it's...
Mm-hmm.
And then another thing is also, like... Sex is everywhere in
yeah.
prison, like same sex.
Yeah.
And they just release whatever they mention.
Mm.
And then they are exposed to the kind of situation. Why don't you want to bring those books?
Yeah.
Like, there is a very interesting conflict to me
yeah.
when it comes to control and
yeah.
punishment. Then this could be just a minor thing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure prison officials are, you know, everything is worst case scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But really, when you go across this list, and what I've always found with these mm-hmm. lists of banned books is for the books that forever, you know, embarrass somebody or whatever. Mm-hmm. There's a million other books that don't, that they make absolutely no sense to be banned whatsoever.
Sure.
And plenty of these books that you have on this list here mm-hmm. are great storytelling, great mm-hmm. art. They're mm-hmm. really entertainment. They're popular. Mm-hmm. You can buy them anywhere.
Absolutely.
And it really doesn't make any sense at all. So that's another part.
Uh-huh.
But let's walk around and see some of the other things in the show.
Sure.
Now, I'm really interested in this electronic installation
uh-huh.
here. So does the piece have a title? This particular
one? The Red Retina
mm-hmm.
Archive.
Red Retina Archive.
Yeah.
All right. So would you like to describe it?
So this little eyeball.
Yes, they're electronic eyeballs.
But actually, it mimics the shape of surveillance camera.
Uh-huh.
And then I put the, I'm using eye tracking technology
mm-hmm.
when I was reading those censored pages.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Not only me, those people who is working for prison libraries and prison organizations. Mm-hmm. And we merge our gaze into
mm-hmm.
one.
Oh, robot. So this is,
mm-hmm.
because I'm gonna just describe, there are these two electric eyeballs.
Right.
One of them is scanning a projected page from
right.
a manga.
Uh-huh.
And the manga is Assassination Classroom, which
uh-huh.
is a very popular...
Uh-huh.
I've only read one volume of it,
uh-huh.
and I just, you know, it's over the top as manga can be, but entertaining in
mm-hmm.
an entertaining way. And there is a light spot that is sort of tracking,
mm-hmm.
would you say it's a composite
mm-hmm.
behavior, reading behavior.
Yes.
From you and other members
uh-huh.
of the organizations
mm-hmm.
you've
so
worked in collaboration with.
Yeah, one of them, one scene is like from me, the other is from another participant. So it's a merge of different gaze.
I see.
And then my metaphor is like the fine line, it's a metaphor of the fine line between reading
mm-hmm.
and censorship
mm-hmm.
or like freedom. To access to information and then how to control of those information by juxtaposing like this red light actually should be reflected here.
Mm-hmm.
So this means like the surveillance on.
Okay.
So those blue dot, which is a heat map of the gaze, graphic of the gaze, and then the red dot is always coming along.
I see.
Order to show the irony of looking at and censoring.
And what's the red light again?
It's an indication of the censorship.
The sensor.
I have the sensor.
I see.
Uh-huh.
I see. Now, the projected manga we're seeing, it's not all, is it only Assassination Classroom or is it other?
There's others.
There's Ghost in the Shell, did I see
yes.
up there? Yes.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes, yes.
I saw Makoto.
Uh-huh.
For a second in one of
uh-huh.
her android
uh-huh.
bodies.
Uh-huh.
Also, an extremely popular manga series that's been made into anime.
Uh-huh.
But why did you choose these particular texts?
I also tried to connect this work to the history of manga.
Uh-huh.
The very beginning of manga is from the foundation of manga is actually Japanese printing ukiyo-e.
Mm-hmm.
And then there is the work called The Dream of Fisherman's Wife.
Mm-hmm.
And then that work actually shows the affair between a woman and octopus.
Okay, and that, of course...
but it's in the museum.
Yes. And that's reminiscent of Assassination Classroom,
uh-huh.
of the alien teacher, which...
It's just pure coincidence.
It's an interesting coincidence.
But I found that, Assassination School is banned because of those Kuro-sensei, which is an octopus.
Yeah. And I actually didn't know about this earlier version
uh-huh.
of
uh-huh.
this. Yeah, so that's... Okay.
I was just lucky. I think.
Yeah. It worked for you.
While I was researching, those things just pop up.
All right. So, what are the drawings over here?
At the back.
Yeah.
Which is more serious version of my data analysis and data visualization.
Mm-hmm.
There is a work, model of all this exhibition.
Mm-hmm.
the word called coding carceral censorship.
Coding carceral censorship. Mm-hmm.
Which collects, digitized, and analyzed all the bamboo list mm-hmm. in prison across United States.
Uh-huh.
So it's a hub of the entire data set. Mm-hmm. And then I analyze those things by author's race mm-hmm. and then the content, I mean, and the contents, gender and sexuality or any type of expression mm-hmm. related to that. And then this graphs actually is called graphing erasure.
Mm-hmm.
So what I want to show is like what I want to show is erased content from the prison and then present it. I mean, make it visible.
Mm, yes. Mm.
To expose what's going on in the prison, but at the same time, I try to create the instruction first mm-hmm. in order to make it a little bit more imaginative
yeah.
and then participatory. Mm-hmm. So if you want to take a picture, just take a picture and you can draw something like this.
Mm-hmm.
So we can go a little bit deeper about those graphs. So what I found really interesting, for example, in Oregon, like 22% of banned books are authored by East Asians.
Mm-hmm.
So it can be marginal, I mean, Bruce Lee's,
mm-hmm.
the, one of the most frequently
mm-hmm.
banned manga.
Well, mm-hmm. uh-huh. I just want to jump in just to let our listeners know that this is an interesting strategy. I've seen other artists use it in different kinds of ways where
mm-hmm.
you actually kind of create an instruction.
Right.
You write it out, and then mm-hmm. you can kind of see the instruction brought through, and you're using your data.
Mm-hmm.
So you're seeing these squares that are blacked in,
mm-hmm.
and that represent the percentages that you've been talking
yes.
about.
Yes.
Yeah.
That's a.
Yeah. Just yeah. This
yeah.
they're for
visual,
for a podcast. I'm trying to bring
very
it light.
Visual.
Yes. yes.
And it's there are 100 squares.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And then we just blacked out. We means like there are also participants who create
uh-huh.
this comic style graphic.
Yes. Because it's yes. Because they are visual and actually, yeah. And that you can relate these to comics
uh-huh.
very quickly. These
sure.
squares
sure.
across
uh-huh.
of the page.
Uh-huh.
Sure.
And so let's go back to the analysis of
mm-hmm.
each graphic. This chart, we call it waffle chart.
Mm-hmm.
Shows how many books are authored by Asians
mm-hmm.
Among those banned publications in prison.
I see.
In the state of Oregon. And it reaches 22% of it.
Mm-hmm.
And then among
wow,
them,
look, yeah.
98% of banned books authored by Asians are manga.
It's really amazing, yeah.
And 70% of those banned manga, 74% of it is banned because they are sexually explicit.
Yeah. Whatever explicit means
uh-huh.
in any particular
exactly.
state, yeah.
And
Oregon in this case, yeah.
To me, the extreme case is Virginia too, because all the
yeah. all the prison books are manga.
This
is in Virginia.
Yeah, in Virginia. All the books written by Asians. All the banned books
all
written
banned.
By yeah,
oh.
by Asians or manga.
Yeah,
and then all of them are banned because they are sexually mm-hmm. explicit.
Mm-hmm.
Then my question is really Akshira.
Okay. Yes. All right.
And the last one is from California. California's list is actually the second longest. The
mm-hmm.
longest one is from Texas.
Okay.
So from the entire book list contains like over 20,000 publications.
Yeah, it's like amazing.
Getting longer and longer and
yeah,
longer.
Yeah, every day.
The fun news is like this year they decided to disclose all the book title banned book titles to the public. They never did it before, but they decided to.
So they've actually banned disclosing
uh-huh.
the titles of books that have been banned. It doesn't get more absurd, but yes.
Exactly,
yeah.
But the list is getting longer,
yeah.
And then I don't know what's the point of it. Maybe there are a lot.
I guess the
requests.
Point is to ban every single book, and then not tell anybody.
Sure. But the. Before that, I paid to get those information.
Oh. So you could buy this information
from the government.
Yeah.
And those
even though our taxes are contributing to the actual banning,
mm-hmm.
but we have to pay to get
yes.
So the levels of absurdity.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it costs between mm-hmm. $25 to $75 per hour.
Oh wow! Okay.
And then in California, 15% of bamboos are authored by Asians, mm-hmm. and then manga accounts for 79% of all bamboos authored mm-hmm. by Asians. But it's unclear that why they are banned. I mean, mm-hmm. meaning like there is no reason behind it. They mm-hmm. had it before, but they disclose it.
Yeah.
So they changed their rules and policies every year.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm doing is just tricking everything every year.
Yeah.
It's I do it manually, so it's very labor intensive, but good thing is I enjoy data.
And what she's talking about here, there are like three rows of mm-hmm. four drawings, although the first row is really instructions and data about what you're mm-hmm. looking at.
Right.
And then there are these series of 100 squares mm-hmm. that are blacked in to kind of show you the percentages, but what I love is that it becomes more surreal
mm-hmm.
as we get to the final row
mm-hmm.
where you don't know where information about what you're seeking is being banned
uh-huh.
from you, and so you've got this series of hazy, hypnotic-looking,
uh-huh.
mysterious squares that kind of represent, it seems to me.
Uh-huh. Because I also want to metaphorically signal
mm-hmm.
like this band book, the reasoning or the mm-hmm. entire list and data set itself is somewhat irrational
yeah.
and then dissolved into the reality, and then it's impossible to find right reasonings
yeah.
behind it.
Yeah.
Partially because there is only one or two people in the main room, and then they censor everything.
Yeah, they censor. Yeah.
And
that's why this last drawing just has
uh-huh.
this feeling of
uh-huh.
irrationality,
exactly.
mystery,
uh-huh.
and opacity to
uh-huh.
it. It's like, no, this makes no sense.
Uh-huh.
Great. All right, now, there's a great mural.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about this. This is really, kind of dominates the whole room here.
Uh-huh. Because I try to make a statement about sexual speech.
Did you illustrate this? Or?
Yes.
Yes.
Usually, this is my very first piece to show my skill set.
Hold on.
Okay.
Something happened. Okay. We're back. We're talking about the wall mural.
Mm-hmm.
All right. That you executed. So tell us about this.
Sure.
It dominates the show.
Uh-huh. First of all, the reason why I want to make it big and very explicit is I really want to attract people who may be interested in that type of pop culture visuals.
Mm-hmm.
Not really just Skelly Gores, who is very into minimalist aesthetics.
Yeah,
and,
yes. Because, there is an
uh-huh.
air of minimalist
uh-huh.
aesthetics
uh-huh.
about the show, but this is maximum.
Yes.
This is maximal aesthetics here, for sure. So can you describe it?
Uh-huh. And this is an artist's statement as well. Because
mm-hmm.
with just analysis, like analytical information, this show may fall into sociological research.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
That creates some distance between the work itself and to the distance.
Mm-hmm.
And so I strategically thought, okay, I need something that communicate directly to the audience
yes.
who wasn't interested in the gallery space usually.
Mm-hmm.
And then pop culture could be one thing. And she is, I want to believe, quite pretty.
Yes, it's dominated by this figure. It looks
uh-huh.
like a woman
uh-huh.
in the center.
It looks like a woman.
Yeah.
Because, you know what? Manga fans, they know she's Motoko Kusanagi.
Yes.
The Ghost in the Shell right away.
Absolutely.
It was fascinating.
Interesting, yes.
it's the Koro Sensei, the octopus.
There's the octopus from Assassination
yeah.
Classroom.
Uh-huh. He doesn't look very like him, but people ask, why is he want to be on top of her?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
I explained them like, oh, there is a connection between two different censorships, and
mm-hmm.
then Motoko Kusanagi represents the censorship in prison,
mm-hmm.
and then the Koro Sensei represent the censorship in public schools, especially New York State.
Yes.
and then they're connected through the cord and tentacles, and then also like historically aligned with the ukiyo-e I mentioned before, which is the dream of fisherman's wife.
Oh, okay.
But
that you spoke about earlier.
Sure, yeah. But what I did for her is I tried to make her less sexual.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
She's somehow like boyish and then gender non-conforming. Yeah. And then sometimes you can ask who is she or who is he or who are mm-hmm. they. That's the strategy to make people be involved with her.
Mm-hmm.
Because anyone can feel like, oh, it could be me, especially
sure.
kids.
Well, her gaze is direct.
Yes.
And engages the viewer uh-huh. immediately.
Uh-huh. Because she's looking at you.
She really, yes, when you're in the space, uh-huh. she's looking at you. Every mm-hmm. person mm-hmm. in you. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But also, like, those figures are about censorship. Mm-hmm. I want to express mm-hmm. the what we could express through those censorship.
Mm-hmm.
And so basically this speculative fiction like illustration echoes the freedom of expression and sexual speech mm-hmm. at the same time.
Yeah. And it's big, y'all. It's like mm-hmm. what, 10 feet across
yeah.
and,
mm-hmm.
and probably almost the same going up.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's a very dominant
it's a central piece.
Yes,
basically.
It is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this week we've kind of gone through the whole show and mm-hmm. the reasons about it, but you've been doing and working in this area in other ways that
mm-hmm.
don't involve necessarily mm-hmm. comics or manga.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen stuff. I should also say right away that when you first hear this podcast, the show itself, which is at Cuchufrito's Galleries, may be down, but I'm going to put connections to your website, which has a really extensive documentation of all of the stuff we've talked about here, and your past work as well.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw stuff about what the book repair
uh-huh.
bar, other kinds of things. Would you mm-hmm. like to talk about that a little bit?
Book Repair Lab is actually the root of this project.
Uh-huh.
I started it in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, I was just very curious about how knowledge is circulated in public systems
mm-hmm.
in general.
Mm-hmm.
And one day, when I was at the Seward Park Library, I was like, maybe I can do something with this library because
sure.
that's my neighborhood library.
Yeah, that,
my
yes,
friend
yes,
of the
yes.
library is there. And then I found damaged books there.
Uh-huh.
And I, as an artist, so much, maybe I can fix it.
yeah, okay, yeah.
And
I mean, actual damaged books.
Uh-huh,
yeah,
actual damaged
yeah.
books in the library.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't brave enough to do it. Everything by myself, so I asked for help to my
yeah.
friend. And then I said, don't you want to borrow a book for me or we can do it together? And he said, like, I can't. And I asked, why? So I don't have ID. What does that mean? Like, you can make an ID and then create the library ID. No, I'm undocumented. From there, like, then I question, then what is the public?
Yes, sure, sure.
And he is actually the person who designed
the electronics.
Exactly.
Yeah, yes.
his contribution is everywhere, actually.
Yeah, yeah.
And then since then, like, I was thinking about who can get an access to mm-hmm. the knowledge or without barrier or...
You know, I accidentally stopped this.
It's okay.
Hold on. You may have missed a little bit. That's my part because I accidentally touched the wrong button. But we're continuing to talk about Sue's earlier work
mm-hmm.
dealing with censorship and addressing the issues that face the undocumented
mm-hmm.
community
sure.
in this city, in this
uh-huh.
state, in this country that we seem to be facing
uh-huh.
on a big, on an
mm-hmm.
awful scale right
uh-huh.
now. So sorry to interrupt you, but I hit the wrong button on the recorder. Sorry.
That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Technology tricky.
It is.
Yeah. So with him, we try to do some interventionist
mm-hmm.
artwork
mm-hmm.
by repairing books.
Repairing books, okay.
And I mean, basically borrowing damaged books without saying you're going to repair, and then put them back mm-hmm. in a mint condition. Nobody knew what happened.
Uh-huh.
And then see like how things are circulated. And uh-huh. I'm just curious, like, maybe there are some people who want to see my artwork in the end. Who knows? I can be tricked. So at some point, that mm-hmm. was my dream.
Yeah.
but that work actually developed into two different work. Mm-hmm. One is ID Shop and the other one is Book Repair Lab. Mm-hmm. At that time, back then, the work's title was Refresh Library Lab. Uh-huh. But right now, one is ID Shop and then one is Book Repair Lab. So ID Shop is the project for undocumented immigrants mm-hmm. and trans folks.
Yeah, true.
Mm-hmm. When they apply, what we do is when they apply for the federally issued ID, we provide the primary residency, the letter of primary residency mm-hmm. for them in mm-hmm. order to at least apply.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes using art institution's name, because mm-hmm. I think art institution can be one's home.
Sure. Yeah, sure.
but sometimes my studio suggests. So I'm okay to share those things. I mean, limited numbers, however, I cannot.
Okay.
But the Book Repair Lab is further developed when the new school asked me to create it in collaboration with the New York Public Library. Uh-huh. And then since then, the work itself is very public facing.
Uh-huh.
And then I decided to collaborate further with incarcerated women
mm-hmm.
because the branch of New York Public Library, which is the Jefferson Market Library, mm-hmm. was the site of
the Jefferson Market Library over on 6th Avenue.
Yes, yes. Mm-hmm. That was a former women's center.
Yeah, oh right, of course. Yes, yes.
So, and then those facilities and that institutional framework is right now on Rikers.
Uh-huh.
So, like, what we did was find damaged library books together mm-hmm. with the library mm-hmm. and then repair them with permission.
Mm-hmm. Sure, sure. Yes, and yeah, you're not sneaking in and doing, like, some sneaky art project uh-huh. necessarily. Now, do you spend time in these prison areas?
Sometimes. Uh-huh. But what I do usually is those people who are incarcerated mm. actually have access, even though they pay 17 cents per minute.
Yeah.
Or it's a ridiculous
yeah,
rate.
Yeah, they're charged.
Uh-huh.
They have a connection with the world. Yeah.
They can click what kind of books they want to uh-huh. borrow, and mm-hmm. then I just search them
mm-hmm.
In case there is a damaged titles.
Yeah.
And then if I was lucky enough to find some and then mm-hmm. just repair them like a new book and then mm-hmm. send them to the books which looks all new.
Yeah.
So it's a very quiet performance. Mm-hmm. And then the tricking is like perhaps my real audience, they never know what kind of books are really repaired by me. Uh-huh. But that's the communication I want to have.
What kind of repair? Does it
usually those damaged books are spines or spines or missing pages.
I
and
see.
Then if there is mm-hmm. missing pages, yeah. I just scan the same page yeah. from different
lines. I see.
And then, yeah.
You know, one thing I want you mentioned your work working with databases mm-hmm. and visualization of data,
mm-hmm.
And I noticed on your website there are projects there mm-hmm. around prison censorship.
Mm-hmm.
That allows you to configure data. I mean, it's, mm-hmm. it's a digital presentation
right.
of what you're talking about
right.
here. Yeah. So I want to make sure people know about your website. Now, is it yourname.com?
Yes, it's myname.com.
It's Sujeong Ka. SUJEONGKA.com. Okay, go there because the show may be down by the time that you hear this podcast. It's called Explicit. I've been here talking with Sujeong Ka herself. It's been very informative, a very fresh approach. It's brought in this topic that we love so much, comics of all kinds from around the world, with another topic that is also important to us. What's going on in our prisons?
Mm-hmm.
Who decides what we can read, what mm-hmm. we can't read?
Mm-hmm.
And why the heck do they think that they can do this to
mm-hmm.
us? So, Sue, thank you so much for being on More to Come. It's been extremely informative. Really love your work.
thank you for inviting me. I feel honored.
Okay, great. Thanks so much.